וידבר השם אל משה במדבר סיני באוהל מועד באחד לחודש השני בשנה השנית לצאתם מארץ מצרים לאמור.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. You're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bamidbar and the holiday of Shavuot. Recording and first broadcast. The third day of the month of Sivan 5772. It corresponds to May 24th. And it is also the 47th day of the Omer. Last night we counted Hayom Shiv'a V'Arba'im Yom Shehem Shisha Shavuot V'Chamisha Yamim La'Omer. Today is 47 days of the Omer, which are 6 weeks and 5 days. Thursday night, tonight, and Friday night are the last 2 nights of the Omer. And then comes the holiday of Shavuot. Psalm 121, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot Esai Nai El Heharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha Adonai Tzilecha Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach baloila. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim vein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meyafeila la'ora u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. By the way, the opening to the show 2 weeks ago, which was recorded on Lag BaOmer, had 30-something, and then the beginning of the Three Stooges, making 33. So Kol HaKavod, I think I mentioned it last week, but I'm not sure, to MG from Rochester, New York, and his gang for solving that one. Last week, I don't even remember, and I don't have time now to replay it, so we'll let it go for the while, and I think it was just Stum. Well, let's leave it. Beginning of this show should be very familiar to a lot of people. The question, of course, is what's the connection to Torah Tidbits this week? So I leave that to anyone who wants to solve it, and send me an email at tt@ou.org. As far as Bamidbar is concerned, I don't know how much we're going to get into that parsha. It's the first sedra of the book of Bamidbar, and I do want to start by elaborating on the lead tidbit from the hard copy this week, because somehow, well, first of all, Bamidbar is usually, not always, but usually the Sedra that immediately precedes Shavuot. And this year especially, it precedes it by one day. Shavuot is Sunday, Saturday night Sunday, and Shabbat Parshat Bamidbar actually right before. And therefore, now, Thursday that I'm recording and some of you are listening to, Friday, hopefully, and not later than that, we are standing at a crossroads, in a figurative sense, in a literary sense, with two paths that diverge in the woods, or two roads, as in the Robert Frost poem. One of them is symbolized and represented by Bamidbar, the whole book of Bamidbar, and the other by Shavuot. Bamidbar is a kind of sad book if you read it through, because it contains a lot of complaining and kvetching and rebelling and decrees against the people. We're talking about the book that contains the sin of the spies, which condemned that generation of males above the age of 20 to wander around for 40 years in the wilderness rather than going straight into Eretz Yisrael and die out so that the new generation would be able to go into Israel. We have the rebellion of Korach and the aftermath of that, and the attempted cursing by Bilam and Balak, and the aftermath of that, which was the seduction to idolatry and immorality, and that resulted in a plague. And there is a body count in the book of Bamidbar that's higher than any other book. It's the one in which God said to the people, this is the 10th time you have challenged me, and that's a special thing, especially since there were more times afterwards. It's, to just give it a little bit of a positive spin, God acknowledges in the Navi, Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayach, I remember the kindness of your youth, Avat kelulotayach, Lechtech acharai b'midbar be'eretz lo zeruah, that you followed me in the midbar in a land that was desolate. So God still looks at that experience in a favorable way for us, and yet we cannot avoid the fact that that generation really messed things up. That's the book of Bamidbar, beginning with Parshat Bamidbar. Although the bad stuff doesn't start yet. At least not directly, although there are some allusions. And then there's the road, which is Shavuot. Shavuot represents the culmination of God's plan. I have said this many, many times in Torah Tidbits Audio. I have written about it more often than that, and I speak about it a lot. God had a plan. Let's go back to the very first time God communicated with Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, at the burning bush. God says two things. I have heard the cries of the people, and I remember my promises to the ancestors. And therefore, God says, I will go down into the land of Egypt to take the people out and bring them to the land flowing with milk and honey. The plan was to take us out of Egypt and bring us to Eretz Yisrael. On the way, the next part of this encounter between God and Moshe tells us that God says to Moshe, and you will know that it is I who sent you into Egypt, because when you come out, you will serve me on this mountain, which our tradition says was Har Sinai, where we received the Torah. In other words, the plan was to come out of Egypt, to get the Torah, and to go into Eretz Yisrael, and there to live happily ever after. Shavuot is Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the receiving of the Torah. The Torah reading of Shavuot morning recounts revelation at Sinai. That's what Shavuot is. Shavuot is also Yom HaBikurim, the first fruits day. It's actually the beginning of the first fruits bringing season, and as such, it represents living in Eretz Yisrael at the best possible time and situation. In other words, with the Beit HaMikdash. With the Beit HaMikdash, with the Sanhedrin with the whole infrastructure of Jewish Torah life in the land of Israel. And it is represented by the statement, the declaration that a Bikurim bringer makes, which in essence is, thank God I am here, and I am thrilled and delighted to be living in Eretz Yisrael, living a life of Torah here. Thank you, God. Shavuot represents the culmination of what we began at the Seder table when we said, Bechol Dor Vodor, in every generation, a person has to see himself as if he came out of Egypt. It's not once upon a time, a long time ago, this happened. It's a reliving of the experience. The 49 days of the Omer, the 7 weeks of the Omer, are meant to be a period of self-improvement that echoes the improvement on a spiritual level of the people from the depths to which they had sunk in Egypt to the heights to which they had risen standing at the foot of Mount Sinai. When we read on Shavuot morning, this coming Sunday morning, the opening lines of the Torah reading, we see this same idea of reliving rather than telling once upon a time stories in the words. Because it says there, and it came to pass in the third month out of Egypt, Bayom Hazeh, on this day, not Bayom Hahu, on that day. It's on this day, the commentaries say, every day it should be new in your eyes, as if today you received the Torah. So, the two roads that diverge in front of us at this moment is the Bamidbar scenario, which includes sin, private sin and communal sin and punishment. And on the other road is the Shavuot road to an acceptance of the Torah in a perfect, glorious way, which we have to live up to, and the entry into the land of Israel with the Beit HaMikdash and with the potential of living happily ever after. That's the crossroads that every Jew faces at this time of year, symbolically, and all the time in reality. We have the ability not to go down the Bamidbar road, even though we will be reading for the next 10 Shabbatot from the book of Bamidbar, but we don't have to personally and communally and nationally go down that road. It's not a good road. What we want is the road, the path to Torah, to mitzvot, to Eretz Yisrael. That's the lesson, the message, the challenge of Bamidbar being juxtaposed to Shavuot, especially this year, when they go one day right after the other. It's a very, very important thing, I believe, to ponder and to talk it over with your families and actually to make some resolutions to see how things will develop in a better way. Okay, we need to review a couple of things. First of all, Shavuot in Israel is one day, as the Torah specifies. In Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, it is 2 days. So we have here in Israel Shabbat followed by one day of Yom Tov, and in Chutz La'aretz there is Shabbat followed by 2 days of Yom Tov. The last time this happened with Shavuot was 14 years ago, and therefore there are certain things that we need to review. Other things which we will review anyway have happened more often than 14 years ago. And by the way, we have a whole bunch of them coming up in the coming years, but that just points to the uneven distribution of year types. But if someone is scratching his head and says, when was the last time that Shavuot night was Saturday night, was Motsoi Shabbat? The answer is 14 years ago. Unlike when Yom Tov precedes Shabbat, a Friday Yom Tov followed by Shabbat, or a Thursday-Friday Yom Tov followed by Shabbat, where we have a provision known as Eruv Tavshilin that will allow certain preparations for Shabbat on Friday, even though Yom Tov is not supposed to be used to prepare for the next day, in the case of Shabbat, and through the procedure of Eruv Tavshilin, there are certain things we're allowed to do. When it comes to Yom Tov following Shabbat, there is nothing that we are allowed to do on Shabbat to get ready for Yom Tov. That means that comes Motsoei Shabbat, when Shabbat is over, which is like 8:18 here in Jerusalem, and slightly different times elsewhere in Israel, and more than slightly different times in different countries of the world, but it's late, summertime late, that's when you can begin with the lighting of Yom Tov candles and the preparation for the evening meal. It puts pressure on the people because you can't set the table on Shabbat. I even saw in Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata that if you intend to take a nap on Shabbat so that you will be more alert to stay up all night learning Torah, don't say it. You don't say, okay, I'm going for a nap in order to be able to stay awake at night. Just go for the nap. Let it be a Shabbos nap. And saying that it is to facilitate staying up all night is a form of hachana, preparation, which is not permissible and is not respectful to Shabbat when it's done for after Shabbat, whether after Shabbat means a regular weekday or even when it means a Yom Tov. On Shabbat, there is a Seudah Shlishit, a third meal. However, many people will eat it a little bit earlier than usual and have less food than usual so that they fulfill the mitzvah of the third Shabbat meal, but they do not spoil their appetites for the Yom Tov meal to come. At the time, from the time that Shabbat is over, and this you have to check your own calendars, we daven Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv contains a passage which constitutes verbal Havdalah from Shabbat. In lieu of that, especially for women who don't necessarily daven Ma'ariv, the statement after the time that Shabbat is officially over, one still has to make a statement of Havdalah, which is either the Vatodienu passage in the davening, or the words Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh. We don't say Ben Kodesh LeChol, because Yom Tov is also Kodesh, but it's a lower level Kedusha, sanctity, and therefore there is a Havdalah. We do it in the davening, or we do it with a verbal declaration, and then, as we begin the meal, we have the not quite rare experience, but not all the time, called Yaknahaz. I would like to speak a little bit about that, maybe a little bit more than a little bit about that. We have a situation where the Gemara teaches us that instead of saying Havdalah for Shabbat by itself and then making Kiddush for Yom Tov by itself, we will combine the ceremonies of Havdalah for Shabbat and Kiddush for Yom Tov with a single cup of wine. Not because we're stingy on wine, but because Chazal wanted this transitional ceremony, so to speak, between Shabbat and Yom Tov. So we come to the dinner table. This is after having Davin Ma'ariv, and after the Yom Tov candles are lit, which must be lit, by the way, from a pre-existing flame, and therefore many people will light a memorial candle on Friday afternoon at candle lighting time, and this will go for more than 24 hours, so that there'll be a flame to take a match to be able to light the Yom Tov candles without producing fire. Handling a fire on Yom Tov is permitted. Production and extinguishing a fire is not permitted on Yom Tov. So you have to have that prepared. If you leave a fire on the stove, then that's available to light the candles from, or a memorial candle. They sell here in Israel, I don't know if they're available elsewhere, 48-hour candles, which you can light on Friday afternoon late, and they will last through Friday, through Shabbat and through Sunday. And on Sunday, when you're allowed to handle fire, it's sometimes convenient to have a light available to light a stove or candles, as the case of Motzoi Shabbat. Okay, now, the Gemara that teaches us that we can combine the Kiddush and the Havdalah raises the question which goes first. And, as is not too uncommon, we have a dispute. One school of thought, the one that's attached to the name of Shmuel in the Gemara, says that we make Havdalah first and then Kiddush, which is logical because Shabbat is departing and Yom Tov is coming in. And therefore, it seems reasonable to say the Havdalah blessings first, followed by the Kiddush blessings. In fact, that opinion comes along with an analogy in the Talmud. The analogy goes like this. If a person is visiting with a king, or a king is visiting a person, and a governor comes and knocks on the door, you do not say to the king, "Wait here, I'll be right back, I want to usher in the governor." You tell the governor to wait because you're saying goodbye to the king. Hold that thought, we'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Bamidbar and for Shavuot. Right before the halfway point, I mentioned the mashal, the analogy from the Talmud, indicating that on Leil Yom Tov, that falls on Motzoi Shabbat, like this year Shavuot, very soon, when we're making Kiddush and Havdalah with one cup of wine, Havdalah logically comes first. Logical, and according to this mashal, on a level of sanctity. The other opinion, attributed to Rav, says that Kiddush goes first. A, because if you say Havdalah immediately, it appears as if you're shrugging Shabbat off because you feel it's a burden. Rather, let its sanctity linger a little, and say Kiddush to welcome the Yom Tov. Furthermore, this produces an overlap of sanctity. Usher in the Yom Tov, and then say a fond and reluctant farewell to the Shabbat. And that's the opinion that prevails. We're going to say Kiddush first, and then Yom Tov, and then Havdalah for Shabbat. Now the question is, what is this Kiddush and Yom Tov, Kiddush and Havdalah combination? Well, the brachot, which we have to say, include Borei Pri HaGafen on the wine. It includes the bracha Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim, which is the Kiddush bracha. We also will take a candle, we'll talk about that in a moment, and say a Borei Miorei HaEsh, as we do on every Havdalah of Motzoi Shabbat. And we will say a bracha called Havdalah, Hamavdil, in this case, Bein Kodesh LeKodesh, between sacred and sacred. And then we will say Shehechyanu V'Kimonu V'Higyanu L'Zman Hazeh. So we have five brachot, which are Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, Zman. That's the order in which we say them. And the abbreviation, the initial letters of each of these words, is pronounced Yaknahaz. Yaknahaz is an acronym for the order of the brachot that we say when we combine Kiddush for Yom Tov with Havdalah for Shabbat. Conspicuously missing, or noticeably missing, is Bisamim, the spices. And generally, the commentaries give some variation of the idea that Yom Tov is not as big of a letdown from Shabbat as a regular weekday would be. So when you go from the high spiritual quality of Shabbat to the regular weekday, you take fragrant spices, you make a blessing, you smell them, you physically enjoy them, and you spiritually enjoy them. We have a notion that the soul benefits from the sense of smell and not from the other senses. And there's Kabbalistic ideas involved in this also, but basically it puts you into a cheerier mood to adjust to your weekday. When you have Yom Tov, Yom Tov does a good job of that. It's not such a big letdown. It goes from one holy special day of rest to another, and therefore the decision was no bracha on spices, no besamim. So we have Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, and Zman. Now remember what I said before, that there was a dispute in broad terms between two opinions that say that Havdalah should go first, or that say that Kiddush should go first. Once we have those two opinions, the Talmud records variations of where the other brachot fit, which we're not going to go into now. It means, do you say the Kiddush bracha first and then Yayin, Ner, and Havdalah, which would put wine after Kiddush, which is not normal, but it will allow the wine to be closer to Havdalah without the Kiddush separating between them. All kind of variations. The maskana, the conclusion, practical tachlis, is you fill a cup of wine at the dinner table. You say Bori Pri Hagafen. You say Mekadesh Yisrael Vahazmanim. Then you either turn towards the Yom Tov candles that have been lit from a pre-existing flame, and you make the bracha Borei Miorei HaEish on them. If they're the kind of candles that you could move and hold the flames together to produce a two-flame torch, that's better for Havdalah. If you can't, because of how the which kind of candles or oil you use, you can just point towards the light and say the bracha Borei Miorei HaEish. As an alternative, and you have to prepare this in advance, they sell little tiny Havdalah candle, twisted, braided candle in a holder, which burns 5 to 10 minutes, and then it goes out by itself, because you cannot extinguish flames on Yom Tov. And some people will bring that to the table, light it by taking a match and transferring from one of the memorial candles or from the Yom Tov candles to light this Havdalah candle, and it's available on the table for Borei Miorei HaEish. And this is followed by Hamavdil Bein Kodesh LeKodesh. And then Shehechiyonu. And even there was a dispute in the Talmud, which we're not going to get into now, as to where the Shehechiyonu bracha goes. Sidurim, Machzorim, give the text for this interesting combination of brachot, and it's a special way to start the Yom Tov meal. Speaking of the Yom Tov meal, actually we're not going to speak of the Yom Tov meal yet, because what I would like to do first is play a song. The song is one of my all-time favorites, part of my top 10 anyway. I've played it before. It's Yehei Rava Kodamach, which is from the end of Brich Shmei, the passage from the Zohar that is said when we take out Torahs. And these words in Aramaic mean, in English, may it be your will, God, to open my heart to the Torah, and to fulfill the wishes of my heart, and of the hearts of all your people Israel, for good, for life, and for peace. It is a beautiful request that we have to God. He gave us the Torah. We committed ourselves to the Torah. We daily recommit ourselves to the Torah, or should. but we want also that God should make our hearts receptive to Torah and to everything that it represents. Yehei Ra'ava Kodamach.
Hey!
There are several different customs that are associated with Shavuot. I don't know how many we'll be able to get to, but let's start with food. There is a tradition to have dairy foods on Shavuot. Because Shavuot is Yom Tov, there's also a tradition to have meat. So we need to work this out. Some people work it out by having an evening meal dairy and a lunchtime meal meat, some vice versa. Some will have meat at night, a short dairy meal when they come home from shul in the morning, and then later a full meat lunch. Others, which I've tried, and it's not so easy for people to take it to it, is to have an abridged dairy meal at night, followed by Birkat HaMazon, and then a break, and then washing again for Hamotzi, and having a meat meal. Two meals, or two partial meals, both at the same evening. One way or the other, I would like to present different ideas about why dairy foods. I don't need to present why meat, because we have a principle in Judaism that today, since the destruction of the temple, Ein Simcha Ella Bebosar V'Yayin. The definition of joy is meat and wine. A note for vegetarians, and that is that this is subjective. In other words, it's not you will eat meat and enjoy it whether you like it or not. No, you will eat meat and enjoy it because most people enjoy eating meat. But if you don't, for whatever reason, then what you're supposed to have on Yom Tov, because of the element of simcha and the fact that food is a part of that joy, then you're supposed to have your favorite dishes. In fact, if a person, let's say his favorite dish is cheese lasagna, and he doesn't really like meat that much, or certainly not like lasagna, so he should rather have the lasagna on Yom Tov than the chicken or the meat, because for him that's a definition of simcha. Generally, average, whatever, ein simcha ela bebasar v'yayin, but it's suggestive. Now, there are some reasons that I will give for dairy which are associated with dairy. Others which are specifically referring to the fact that we have dairy and meat. You'll see what I mean in a moment. I don't know if these are in any particular order, but there is a verse in Shir HaShirim that alludes to Torah as, quote, honey and milk under your tongue. Interesting that the land of Israel is called repeatedly throughout Tanakh, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey, milk mentioned first and then honey, and this one reference in Shir HaShirim to Torah as Dvash V'chalav tachat l'shonech. And therefore, some say that when we are celebrating the receiving of the Torah, it is appropriate to have milk and honey. And some actually mix honey with milk, or yogurt and sour cream with the honey, and use that maybe with their blintzes. I mean, some of this is pure custom or pure family practice, and others is rooted in long-time tradition, time-honored tradition. To commemorate the first Shavuot celebrated in the Midbar when our ancestors ate only dairy dishes. Why? Because the eating of kosher meat after receiving the Torah requires a lot of preparation. It would be analogous to today, someone who didn't keep kosher and then made a decision to keep kosher. He's going to start with subsisting on cottage cheese and yogurt until he gets his new dishes and pots and pans and starts preparing meat in a kosher way. There is a reference to Har Sinai as being called, and from Tehillim, Har Gavnunim, and Gavnunim is similar to the word Gavina for cheese. The numeric value of the word Chalav is 40, and it's an allusion to the 40 days and 40 nights that Moshe spent on Har Sinai receiving the Torah. Now, you have also, I mentioned, that some things only make sense if you look at it as not just having dairy, but having dairy together with, dairy and meat, and of course separating them. Now, we have a verse which is appears twice in the Torah, which is a strange combination of two mitzvot. One is a positive command and one is a prohibition. The pasuk says, Reishit bikurei admatcha tavi beit Hashem Elokecha. The first fruits of the ground you shall bring to the Beit HaMikdash. Lo tevashel gedi b'chaleivimo. Do not cook a goat in its mother's milk. You have the prohibition of mixing milk and meat in the same verse, twice, in the same verse that you have the positive command to bring bikurim. Bikurim is associated with Shavuot. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Shavuot is called Yom HaBikurim or Chag HaBikurim. And the prohibition of milk and meat being placed in the same verse with the reminder of Shavuot perhaps led to it being a reminder. Or you could look at it even more seriously as the laws of milk and meat being a microcosm of the whole Torah. I say that specifically because the cryptic words, Lo tevashel gedi b'chaleivimo, do not seethe a kid in its mother's milk. And from there we are taught a whole body of Torah Sheba'al Peh, oral law related to the prohibitions of milk and meat, and rabbinic law that's related to the prohibitions of milk and meat. Make that topic of milk and meat, as I said, a microcosm of all of Torah, which is made up of the written word, the oral law, and rabbinic legislation and tradition. So, bringing it down to a culinary level, we symbolize the whole process of receiving and committing ourselves to Torah by having dairy dishes and meat dishes, but never the twain shall meet. In other words, proper adherence to the laws of separating of milk and meat become a culinary example of commitment to the whole package deal that is Torah. I personally find that very strong. Then you have a reference to two loaves of bread, which is a special offering for Shavuot. There is a rule in Shulchan Aruch, especially back in the days when people ate with their fingers, that one was not allowed to use the same bread loaf left over from a meat meal to a dairy meal because his hands might be full of grease from the meat, and he puts it onto the bread, and then he puts butter on that or has it with dairy, which is not appropriate. You need two loaves. Two loaves reminds us of Shavuot, and this having both meat and milk reminds us of that same idea of two loaves. We have a tradition that 3 months after Moshe was born, which comes to the same time as Shavuot, 80 years earlier, he was found by the daughter of Paro in the Nile. He refused to nurse from the Egyptian midwives, and Yocheved, his own mother, was called to nurse him. And that concept of newborn and nursing is dairy. Not that mother's milk is dairy, it isn't, but it reminds us of that whole thing, including the newborn nation, appropriate to have milk. We're very much out of time, enough time to just wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chag Sameach, and good learning and good recommitting to Torah, and enjoy your Chag. Lehishtameah.